Good morning. It's Community Spotlight and our special guest today, State Representative Chris Dush of the 66th District, that's in Jefferson County and Northern Indiana County. Hey, thanks for taking the time and coming into the studio.
I'm glad to be here.
It's awesome to see you. This is the first time we ever met.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Not the first time in the studios, but I'm glad to see you here.
This is great. Now, there's a couple topics that we want to cover. Now, the importance of the census. Every 10 years, we count our people, and we call that a census. It really is vital that we get accurate numbers. Do you want to explain why?
Well, it affects the legislative districts. Right now, each of us have 64,000 constituents in the state house, and dividing those constituents up and drawing the maps and stuff, that's very important. But one thing I'd really like to stress is Green Township in Indiana County is part of the district. And they were, I think, 5 or 7 people short of being able to receive community development block grant money here as a result of the last census. And we know there are homes that typically don't participate. They refuse for one reason or another. And that cost Green Township hundreds of thousands of dollars and over the last 10 years. And it was money that the taxpayers there have been paying out, but they're not getting the benefit of it coming back to them in the forms of those community development block grants.
So the population is a big part of it. I mean, whenever you're looking for the grant money, you know, the more people you have, what the more likely it is that you're going to get the cash?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And also in the census, one of the nice things, the last Congress and President Trump took out an awful lot of the intrusive things that caused a lot of people in 2010 not to participate. They're going back to the old style way of doing the census where it's going to have who you are, what age, your birth date and sex and stuff like that. But that information is held. It's not released on individuals for 70 years. And instead of all the intrusive stuff, I think they were asking about guns the last time and some other things that just caused people to not participate. And because of what it means to the communities, both in getting the tax dollars back that they're paying out, as well as making sure that we are fully represented here, it's very important that people participate.
You know, 20 years ago, I did the part-time enumerator job with the U.S. Census, and that was 20 years ago. So now what we had is, I don't want to say people that are paranoid, but how about if I use the term people with persecutory thoughts? You know, there were some people, you know, because we were the batch that would go out, you know, it's like, well, they didn't send the form in. You know, you get your,
yes,
you know, you have to complete the form, and it's like, okay, well, you just fill it out and you send it in, and now you can do it online, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, we were the people that would go out because nothing, we didn't get a form. So, you know, knock on their door, you know, canvas an area, get a whole bunch of houses and knock on the door. And some people were nice. Like, they had a short form and a long form. Now, the short form people, they were easy. And then,
yes,
you know, for the most part. And then some of the people with the long form, they were very, you know, a little off. They said, you know, it's like, well, the government's already got that information. Well, I need you to, you know what I mean? So you're going to have this batch of people, man. You know, how can you ease the you know, like the, you know, their thoughts of, you know, like out the, you know, they're out to get me. You're out to help them.
Yes, absolutely. And again, congressional districts, we're going to lose at least one congressperson here after this census. And if we don't get a full count here in Pennsylvania, we're going to lose another one. And that's going to be very important when it comes to the Electoral College for electing the president, that sort of thing. Like I said, we're going back to that. It's basically the short form all over again.
Oh, see, now that's fantastic. That's the easy form to fill out. And then just to kind of like also ease like some sort of thoughts there, you said there's no information about how many guns do you have in your house.
That's correct.
There's no information like that. So this is a less intrusive. This goes back to the time whenever I did the enumeration.
Well, this goes back to the time when the Constitution was drafted and they first started doing the census.
Oh, the way it should be.
Yes, exactly. This is the very short, basic information that if you pull up the old microfiche forms from the 1800s and the early 1900s, Those questions and answers, and I did a little bit of ancestral research. The questions that are on there now are the questions that were on there 150, 200 years ago.
Now, what if somebody's not a U.S. citizen?
They are counted, but they are not getting any benefit as far as the they're not going to receive any benefits from that. However, the communities that are taking care of them or the taking care of their needs, they will, if they're living at someone's home, for instance, my mother-in-law was a British citizen for a number of years while she was living here in the United States. Not a citizen, but she was still receiving benefits, you know, from the roads and everything else of being here. So it's very important that she was counted.
Well, that's fantastic. And now this is also important for what like property taxes and stuff like that, too.
Absolutely. It helps to determine the division of how those property taxes are assessed.
Okay. And the first batch is you go to like large living areas. So you're going to go to like school campuses for the census count first, right? And then like, you know, assisted living facilities, you count them. And then is it everybody else or is it the other way around? I forget which way.
Actually, this year, because of the advances in the internet capabilities and that kind of thing, it's going to be pretty much going out all at the same time. It's going to start here in February, the advance notices, but it's whoever is living in your home as of April 1st.
Okay.
And as well as the nursing homes and even the prisons.
Oh, that's right. The prison population is counted too.
It is.
And that goes into the total there. So as far as like, you know, people aren't counted twice or anything like that.
That's correct.
Okay. Because I'm sure that there's some people that say it's like, well, you know, they can count people, you know, many times. Not so much the case. All right, so it is important to get the census thing, and April 1st is when you said it's going to all start then.
That'll be the people who are living there on April 1st. The efforts are going to begin sooner than that and will progress a little bit further beyond that, but the main thing is we've got to get, it'll be the people who are living in the home on April 1st.
All right, very important. Now, all the data is compiled, and then I think what the figures are released like next year then, right?
That's correct.
Okay, because it does take a while to compile all of that information. It's a lot of info. All right, then the other thing you want to talk about is the minimum wage issue in Pennsylvania.
Well, Governor Wolf is adamant that he wants that $15 an hour pay for minimum wage, and we've seen out in Washington State, the first adopters of it, what that's done to the people who are coming into the wage earning market. Employers aren't willing to hire somebody that's not going to give them $15 an hour worth of value. So the people who are just trying to get into the job market, it's affecting them drastically.
Does this really affect the mom and pop businesses more than, like, say, like the big conglomerate businesses?
Absolutely. In fact, the differences between the large corporations who are better able to absorb some of this stuff, their willingness to go along with it versus the mom and pops. Nobody in any of my chambers, the Chambers of Commerce here, Brookville, Punxsutawney, or Indiana, are for this. They know what it'll do to them. You know, our cost of living is rather low here in this area. Our median income is well below the state median income. So to try and bump that up, our employers are, it'll shut some stores down, especially our restaurants. The governor initially wanted the tip salary employees or the tipped employees to go to $15 an hour too, and every single waiter and waitress that I've talked to, server, they are adamantly against this.
Well, you think about, like, you know, these mom and pop stores, they're competing against the big conglomerates, you know, which is kind of a challenge to begin with. This would be another big pile of stuff they'd have to kind of carry to try to struggle against the conglomerates in competition that way too.
Well, and the conglomerates too, they will be affected, and what'll happen there is traditionally they reduce benefits as a result. So you'll get the increase in salary, but the benefits will be cut.
So then the governor wants to do something that just doesn't seem like the argument against what he's trying to do is it a constitutional issue?
Well, it is a legislative issue, and he knows he can't get the minimum wage hike without the legislature. So what he's trying to do now is an end around on us and kind of hold us over a barrel. He's done an executive executive order kind of thing through regulation on salaried employees. What he's doing is making a threshold where, in essence, the employer would have to start shifting the person from a salary over to wage in order to get control over costs. And that salary level is pretty low, but then the governor's built in an escalator. So year after year after year, there are going to be more and more employees that'll be taken off of the salaried, off their salaried positions and put into a wage position. And this is going to affect people that love the freedom of being in a salaried position where they can kind of set their own hours, salespeople, that kind of thing. Or, you know, there are some people who are on salary, single mothers, whatever, that enjoy the ability to be able to go and take care of the things that their children need and then get back to work. Well, if this goes into effect, there are going to be a lot of those people who are going to end up punching a time clock and not have those freedoms any longer.
Well, didn't you guys just pass like a minimum wage that goes into effect in a couple of years or something like that in PA, where it is going to increase?
No, that hasn't passed yet.
Okay. And there was another proposal then, I think, for $9 an hour or something like that.
Oh, there are several proposals out there.
But he doesn't want to compromise on this, is what you're saying?
Well, I think he's willing to compromise. The latest bill, it is a graduated thing up to $9 an hour initially. He wants to be able to leave saying he's at least started the process, but some people have agreed to it, but it's definitely not the entire state legislature, and I don't think enough to get it across the finish line unless the threats of doing the what he's got planned for the salaried employees.
So what's your strategy to combat this then?
Well, what we're doing right now is the regulatory stuff has to go through the Independent Regulatory Review Committee or Commission. And that commission has the ability to approve those regulations or not. We're hearing that they're leaning toward that. And I'm on the House Labor and Industry Committee, and we're planning on doing some things to block that or at least slow it down. If it goes through without any comment from the legislature and in particularly the committees that are responsible for it, it'll sail through and it'll be a done deal here in a matter of weeks.
So I like the fact that we have a representative democracy, and you have the division of powers, and you know, you represent us, the voters, and to have one person that can say override all of that, it is kind of a bit disturbing in some ways.
It is. It was never meant to be that way. In fact, if you go back to the time of Woodrow Wilson, he was the one that actually got this administrative state started. He had this book that was called Philip Drew Administrator, that he sold the whole concept of writing broad pieces of legislation that delegated an awful lot of authority to the executive branch, and then they would set the policy and become both the writers of the law, the administrators of the law, and set up these administrative courts that would be the judges. And it was never meant to be that way. The law was supposed to be written by the legislature. Anything that had the ability to provide force or the use of force against the people to compel them to do something or not to do something, even, you know, like paying a certain wage, whatever, that was meant to be at the legislature, because we are the people that the everyday citizen can hire or fire every 2 years. When you get into the executive branch and the judiciary, that doesn't happen.
State Representative Chris Dush, 66th District, thank you so much for coming in and taking the time and chatting. Can you come back sometime?
Absolutely.
Oh, this is absolutely fantastic. That is Community Spotlight for today.